The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio for a... all sorts of good information today. Bill's not on there. Bill's in the cone of silence.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, no, you're not in the cone of silence anymore. Oh,
I guess just my headset's in the cone of silence.
You can't miss some good smart, huh?
You have no headphones?
Here you go, Bill. How about that?
Oh, can you hear us? That's much better.
Oh, little technical difficulties. We could do those before the show started.
When the other
hosts
play with the controls, I'm not...
We could get this squared away before we start, but there's never time for that.
Control.
So, anyway.
Oh, that takes all the fun out of it.
All right, so I'm Aaron Ryan.
Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin, who's been rendered silent over there now. You with us, Bob?
I'm doing great. How about you? How about y'all?
Okay. Well, we were going to go to church this morning at 9:30, except for it started at 8:30. That's what we get for going to a different one. Didn't do our recon properly. So, go to 11 o'clock. So we've been racing around town rewriting our check for church, for different churches. Kind of nutty. We have the first hour we're going to be talking about Indian tribes, dams, and national security. It kind of all goes together there. Normally people who don't live in rural...
What'd you say? Damn Indian security?
Yeah, damn Indian national security.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't pay attention.
I know. When I was typing it up, it was very tempting to have a little fun with words there. But I know that we have our folks in Philadelphia who listen to us on WNJC on Mondays from 1 to 3. And so they might not deal with stuff like this. So we want to make sure that they're in the know. This story takes place in Montana. We are in California. We are live Sundays from noon to 2 here on KCNR. So hope you join us on Sundays. We've got a chat room open. Mondays, I guess you're kind of on your own. You're listening to the archive. But we're happy to have you join us anytime. And by this afternoon, I will have the commercial-free archive up if you want to send this to a friend. So... WeThePeopleRadio.us is the website, and I don't think I missed anything.
No, just tell a friend.
How'd we do? Housekeeping done? We're moving on.
Yeah, looks good.
So we have Lawrence Kogan with us this afternoon. He is the managing principal of the Kogan Law Group and president and CEO for the Institute for Trade Standards and Sustainable Development. And that's where we first met him, was talking about that. But that's a whole different topic. We're moving on. Now the Kogan Law Group is representing, I'll just let him tell you, because I've got a lot of information on the website. So I hope you will go on there and do a little free reading. But Lawrence does all sorts of neat stuff, a lot of international business. And I was going to read this bio, but it goes on and on. Lawrence, you're a busy guy.
Well, you know, you got to burn the midnight oil, as they say.
It looks like you're burning that, and maybe some of our midnight oil too.
Burning next week's midnight oil.
All right. So, where would you like to start on this little adventure?
I was called in from friends in Montana back in February, and they wanted me to get involved in a very controversial debate over a water compact that was being negotiated, or that had actually been signed already by the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes of the Flathead Indian Reservation in northwest Montana, the state of Montana, and the federal government, which would basically fix water rights in that state pretty much in significant favor to the tribes. And the irrigating community in northwestern Montana that has family and ranches and farms on the Indian reservation and above the Indian reservation, as well as businesses, were very upset that they would lose state-held water rights to the tribal government. And they had, they had the bill that the Montana legislature was looking to enact to effectively ratify that agreement between the three governments. And they were having a hearing in the Judiciary Committee in April, and they wanted me to come in, and I didn't want anything to do with it originally, but I started hearing about all the horror stories and how the hardships were being faced and by these people, and I, you know, my heart went out to them, and I thought perhaps maybe there's something I can do here for them.
So, okay, so for the people who don't have any clue what goes on with water rights and or Indian tribes and water rights and all that, why is this a bad thing?
Well, it's not necessarily a bad thing. What it is, though, it is a reflection of federal policy toward federally recognized Indian tribes that basically favors them over everybody else. So every state has, you know, its own laws concerning land and property and water rights. In this particular case, because it was a treaty between the state of Montana, the federal government, and the Indian tribal government, those state rights were basically given away in favor of the tribal government, and the federal government was just happy as a lark that that was being done, and we think perhaps the state was getting paid off in order to do that through federal funds.
Oh.
But no one asked anybody that lived on the reservation that had family farms or family ranches. Nobody asked the people who had businesses on Flathead Lake, which is the largest natural water lake west of the Mississippi. Nobody asked anybody any questions. It was just a done deal. It was political.
And water rights are property rights. I mean, your property's not worth much, and your farm and your ranch isn't worth much without water. And so this literally steals private property from people.
In the West, water rights are very, very important. You can't irrigate your land without water. And water rights, based on appropriation doctrine especially, which is, you know, the first that gets to use the water and diverts it from natural course and continues to divert, basically has the water right, and then you have to put it through a water court, as the law in Montana now provides since the 70s. People get very emotional about this.
Well, California is deep in the throes of water issues right now. I mean, aside from the drought, just the fact that they've taken a lot of the water away from the Central Valley farms and basically turned them into a wasteland. So we're aware of...
Well, you hear all the time in California, anyway, that 80% of the water goes to agriculture.
Right.
But actually, that's a sleight of hand with numbers, because 50% of the water goes for what they call environmental purposes, a.k.a. the fish.
The salmon.
So 50% of our water in California, with what little we have, gets carved out and winds up going, just running down the river. 40% goes to agriculture. Well, if you get rid of the first 50, that 40 becomes 80 of what's remaining. So
right. So they're basically favoring the fish over the people.
Exactly.
Which is what environmental extremist groups are famous for.
Sure. And so now if tribes get to supersede water rights, you can't get there.
Well, the tribal government has an interest consistent with the environmental movement. They want a pristine environment. They want pristine wildlife. They want pristine fish. They don't want hatcheries. They want natural flowing fish.
It's kind of funny, though. So, here they gillnet the heck out of them, and they don't really care which ones they are, but it's quite a bit of selling of those fish, and since they self-regulate, it's really no big deal, I guess.
Well, but plus there's water here, though. Montana is like the jewel of the Nile of water. It's got many, many rivers. And water, as you know, in California, has become a commodity. It's quite valuable.
Exactly. Well, how likely is it, these guys, how likely is it ideas like this will bleed over into other states if this goes through?
Well, this is a special water compact. It's actually the first water compact that Congress is reviewing that, you know, for ratification that would involve off-Indian reservation water rights. Because in the Pacific Northwest, there are a special group of treaties called, quote-unquote, Stevens Treaties, where there was the Secretary of Interior Stevens in the late 19th century that went around negotiating with tribal governments to, you know, make reservations from large portions of the country that were aboriginal lands before the, you know, the battles between the U.S. government and the tribal government and the tribes. And these treaties allow, in this particular treaty, the CSKT Water Compact allows the CSKT tribal government to basically regulate off-reservation use of land and water in their favor.
Oh.
And they have fishing rights and they have hunting rights. They can walk into your backyard north of the reservation and, you know, in pursuit of an animal or in pursuit of fishing. And they don't need to ask your permission or obtain an easement.
Wow, that's a neat trick.
That's crazy. I thought we were over the top, but that sounds really over the top.
Right, and because they shared legal jurisdiction with federal agencies to regulate the environment, such as the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. And the, you know, the EPA, for instance, is their partner in crime here. They delegate jurisdictional authority to the tribal government. They can regulate a zone of almost 50 to 100 miles outside the reservation so that nothing pollutes the lake upstream from the reservation. No air, ambient air, could pollute the lake as it falls to the water level. And you have to treat the whole habitat for these threatened or endangered species as pristine. So your economic activities are severely curtailed.
Yeah. No touching. No using.
No, right.
Well, I think that's more California.
And you can't look at it because you can't get there.
Well, you may cause them distress, and that's no good.
Oh, my God. Well, okay, so these dams are big up there. This involves... Where do the dams... I guess I should ask you, where do the dams come in all of this?
Well, this particular lawsuit, I mean, first of all, that this part of Montana, the dams like the Hungry Horse Dam, which is a very, very large dam managed by the Department of Interior Bureau of Reclamation, right by Glacier National Park, is the dam that, you know, provides a lot of the water that goes downstream through the Flathead River to the next biggest dam, which is the Kerr Dam. And both of these dams are part of the Columbia River system that flows out of the Columbia and into the Pacific.
Now, is that water stored primarily for agriculture, or is it flood control, or what was the main reason for the dams?
When these dams were built, the primary reason was, they wanted navigability for interstate and foreign commerce. They wanted it for agriculture, and they wanted it for other, public interest purposes. Nowhere did they mention fish, wildlife, or environment. Over the ensuing years, from the early 20th century toward the end of the 20th century, especially during the Clinton administration, they changed the purpose of the reservations from, mostly agrarian purposes into fish, wildlife, and environmental protection. So, and this is consistent with the tribe's cultural, spiritual, and religious values.
It just sounds so much like what we're dealing with in California. They've done the same thing with our dams that were built primarily for agricultural use and flood control, and now they're trying to make their primary use fish and environmental.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to just take them out, actually. Big thing here is taking them out.
Well, and along the Klamath, they're taking out four dams. I mean, I'm going to be visiting people out
in our neck of the woods?
Region, in the upper Klamath, as well as in the lower Klamath, down in Siskiyou County, Northern California. So they're all up in arms because they can't irrigate anymore because the water is going to be flowing through rather than diverted.
Exactly. Well, and in the case of that river system, we've done lots of shows on that. And in the Klamath system, if they take those dams out, the Klamath River won't be a river year-round because historically it went dry in the summer. So,
right.
And it wasn't because of drought. It just was because that's the way the river worked. So having that series of dams actually maintained the water all year. So how that's benefiting fish habitat is a giant mystery with... No answer in truth, actually. You've got to lie if you're going to get the answer they want.
Right. And so, really, my involvement thus far with the community in northwestern Montana has begun in a legal sense regarding the transfer of this large Kerr Dam, which is a black start dam, that is a hydroelectric powered dam that is independent of the electrical grid. It could start up on its own, but it's also a Category 3 high hazard dam, which means if it were to fail, you'd have lots of death in the valley below it.
Oh, I wondered what that meant.
And the thing here is this is the first time in U.S. history that a dam of that stature will be handed over, and it's already been handed over as of last Saturday, the 5th of September, to a tribal government that has very little accountability, transparency, or responsibility to the public interest.
And I'm just going to take a guess here, but little or no expertise in actually running a dam, large or small?
Well, this tribal government has been a co-licensee since 1985 of this dam because it sued the federal government to make sure that it had a piece of the dam because it sits partially on the Indian reservation. And they sued them in 1985, and the Reagan administration came up with a settlement between the parties. And essentially, according to what the government story is, they basically gifted the dam to the tribal government 30 years in the future.
Oh. Well, that's an interesting twist.
No review. There was no public review, no public hearings. They said that they are, but there's no records to back that up.
Now, you say this is a large dam. How large is it?
It's rather large. If you were to look up Kerr Dam on the Google, I mean, this thing stands, I think, 300 feet high from the ground.
Oh, yikes. So it's
and
like Shasta Dam.
It's a large dam. It's the second largest dam on the Flathead River. The first one is the Hungry Horse Dam, which is almost twice as large, and this one is twice as large as any of the other 11 dams and reservoirs that the tribal government also owns. So if you're a farmer or a rancher on this Indian reservation, the water that flows in from the mountain gets stored in a reservoir. The tribal government decides when it comes out of the reservoir. If it comes in from the lake, Flathead Lake, Kerr Dam is the dam that holds it in place and distributes the water, lets it go, and the tribal government decides when it wants to let it go. Yeah. And then there's an irrigation system, which was built with U.S. taxpayer monies that these people paid for and were entitled to have the restored to them, and for which they would pay maintenance, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs took it back from them, saying, you know, you don't really own it, we do.
Oh my gosh. All right, we need to take a really quick break. We're going to wind up with all of them at the same time. So people have 2 minutes to look up the Kerr Dam, and I would think when you look at those pictures, you'll realize this is a...
If you Google Kerr Dam, K-E-R-R Dam, it's got some great pictures of it.
Yeah, this isn't some little deal here. We will be right back with you in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, for all the information on today's show and lots of others for the last 5 years. Be right back. So now we're going to take back our dams that we didn't build.
Away our native tongue.
Oh, Bob, make it stop. I can't take it.
On top there
is oh, Lawrence, we're just doing
no,
that
no,
to...
No, listen, no dam puns, guys. No dam puns.
Well, we were reading here in the Wikipedia under Kerr Dam, and they've already updated their Wikipedia.
Yes, I know. Did you see, by the way, our Breitbart the Breitbart article that was written about our lawsuit?
I did read it. Did I post it?
I posted it.
It
went overboard a bit.
Yeah, just slightly.
Slightly, yeah. I think they're into hyperbole over there.
they went completely hysterical. Well, this interesting. The one part that was I found irritating was now it's going to be the name of the company. Now is going to be Energy Keepers Incorporated. Oh, that's terrific.
Well, yeah, that was an interesting company. It was set up by the federal government for the tribal government, and it was set up in 2012, but it had the expertise in order to take the license. So it co-licensed with the tribal government for the dam. The federal government backed it up with, oh, yes, they hired employees from Northwestern Energy that was the former licensee.
Oh.
That gives them the ability to manage and operate the dam.
Now, Lawrence,
if they were serving as interns. Okay.
Oh, okay.
If the tribe gets control of this dam,
would that give them future
ability if they wanted to remove it? Would that be something they would have the power to do, or is it still?
Absolutely, they would have the power to do it, just like they did in Klamath. They could take the dam down, which is not something that you should dismiss because they're already talking about taking down Libby Dam in Northwest Montana.
That's the big push. It's a giant,
and that's part of the Columbia River Basin as well.
So people who depend on that water, Southern California,
they're out of luck.
Yeah, good luck to you.
They're going to be high and dry.
Literally.
Yeah.
So what do you think can be done at this point, since this is kind of the culmination of a long range plan, I guess?
We're on, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah, sorry, we're talking to the public now.
Yes, okay, well, that's good, because the public should know. Now, the fact that this Kerr Dam is pretty much the final piece of the puzzle, this tribal government now owns all of the dams on or pertinent to the reservation, so they can now, with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which manages and operates the Flathead Irrigation Project, which is the intricate complex of canals, irrigation and lateral canals that feed the irrigation. They can turn the water off and on when they want to suit the fish and their other environmental and wildlife fish, interests.
Well, and to crush agriculture.
And to use a pun, you know, the irrigators be damned.
Yeah.
And this is actually happening now because they have a drought management plan in place that the Department of Interior had several years ago developed without public input, that was hidden behind the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission management of the dam, which is really the crux of our lawsuit, is that since 1985, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the Department of Interior have collectively together both deceived the Montana public about who has control over the licensing and management of the dam and the license itself, the implementation of that license. In 1985, that license had about 53 different articles. During the Clinton administration, in the years of 1997, 1998, and 2000, the Department of Interior, secretly behind the curtain like the Wizard of Oz, created 27 new articles for this license agreement, all focused on wildlife, fish, and environment. And the Montana people had nothing to say about it. And FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, just rubber stamped it all into the license. And presto chango, you have a new license.
Wow. But if a company like Pacific Corp up there in the Klamath dams, if they want to relicense the dams, you can't get there from here with FERC.
Right. You know, now the FERC regulations, the statute, the Administrative Procedure Act, the Constitution all provide for public hearing. Okay? And when we were in the hearing in Federal District Court in the District of Columbia last week, the Department of Justice actually made the bold assertion that the public doesn't have a right to public hearings. It's up to the discretion of the agencies. Even if it's written into law, it's up to their discretion.
Wow, not Obama's Department of Justice. How could they ever think that?
Non-elected officials get to make the rules for everybody to live by.
Well, they tell you what you can't do and they tell you what you can do. It's like the European Union.
Yeah, so, you know, that old expression with the inmates running the asylum, the inmates are the bureaucrats.
This is the same EPA that just poisoned the river with mining waste.
Yeah.
It's just a little mistake. There's no biggie.
Right. Now, again, this is the process-based arguments that we've made in the lawsuit. No public hearing has ever been given since 1985 to ensure that the Montana public, that the conveyance of the dam to the tribal government and the transfer of the license to the tribal government and its subsidiary, Energy Keepers, Inc., was in the public interest. They never did that. They never had to account for that. And they don't believe they have to, because it was a political deal done back in 85, which effectively was a gift of a future interest 30 years into the future to this tribal government. Now, did they ever think that we'd be in a post-9/11 world? Could you have conceived of that in 1985?
Yeah, no, nobody thought about that kind of thing. And so with the sovereignty clause that the tribes have over this, I know there was some discussion about the Turkish government
being involved. Well, we have to back up
involved?
A little bit here, though. Okay. We have to back up. And what we need to focus our audience on is the fact that tribal governments, if they're federally recognized tribal entities under federal law, are entitled to a host of waivers from normal regulatory requirements imposed on private industry or private actors. They don't have to meet the same requirements as you or I would have to meet, and they get exemptions. And this occurred over the course of 30 years. And when the time for the conveyance, for notifying the government of the conveyance and the transfer of the license, the tribes were again given an exemption not to have to meet the normal acquisition rules, which required public hearing, due diligence, review. The government had to explain that this was in the public interest and show why.
Yeah, how do they get that? I mean, why don't they have to comply to the same rules?
Because a federally recognized tribe is a creative fiction that the federal government developed 40 years ago to give preference to tribal governments to right the wrongs of the past.
Oh boy.
So this is kind of like reparations, repentance, and restoration of the tribe's sovereignty and its claims over waters and lands that they once had. And it gives them this almost, it's like a racial discrimination, which the Bureau of Indian Affairs has called benign, that you can't yet attack successfully in court. Because when a law is considered racially discriminatory, there's two different levels of analysis depending upon what type of law it is.
Ew.
If it's a law that favors a federally recognized tribe, then it's considered benign racism. And it goes into a low-level review called rational basis to determine its constitutionality. And all the government has to do is show a logical relationship of the racially discriminatory law to some bona fide federal policy, and they can defend the law against a claim of unconstitutionality. Now, if you are a black-owned entity or a Hispanic-owned entity and you had a law or the government implemented a law in your favor, it would not be subject to that same low-level review. It would be subject to strict scrutiny to determine whether the law or the implementation of the law was constitutional, which requires the court to undertake a balancing test to examine the benefits versus the costs of doing what they're supposed to do. Federally recognized tribal status doesn't go to that balancing test. It's automatically deemed okay.
My gosh. Well, okay, so
that violates the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, both in the 14th Amendment, if a state does it, and in the 5th Amendment, if the federal government does it.
So where does that come in? It just goes out.
So if they have all these environmental, fish and wildlife conditions in the license, and the Endangered Species Act, which it implements, is applied in favor of the tribe's interest in fish, wildlife, and environment, that's a racially discriminatory application of a facially neutral statute. But according to the U.S. government, that's benign racism. It's okay.
That's good racism. Wow. Wow.
This is stuff that sounds like it's out of Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so for the rest of us, I guess we have to sit around and wait till we're a minority and then try to get all our stuff back.
Either that or you could become a political organization such as a federally recognized tribe.
And
if you get that political status, then they can make laws in your favor at the expense of everybody else, and they call it okay.
Wow.
But that affects a lot of economic interests, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
It affects your constitutional rights, which you have to check at the door, because remember, federally recognized tribal entity is on a reservation, which is deemed sovereign. Even the feds can't go in there unless there's a federal crime.
So if this kills your water rights and makes your property worthless, too bad.
Well, see, you in Oregon and in Northern California have a lesson learned to teach the public in Montana. Because of the breakdown of the dams and the effect on water rights there, property values plummeted, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they haven't taken the dams out yet. But, I mean, it's like any other, you know, they're talking about raising Shasta Dam. I don't mean R-A-Z, I mean R-A-I-S. So by making it 18 feet higher, that affects all the property in the small town of Lakehead that's near that. It affects all the people who have marinas or a restaurant or whatever you have around the lake, all the recreation. And so those people can't do anything with their businesses because potentially that business is underwater. And that's been going on for 34 years.
Right. So you could understand why people, you know, and have farms, ranches, and businesses around the Flathead Indian Reservation are quite distressed.
Oh, yeah.
And why they didn't want this dam conveyance to go through. So what we did was we tried an emergency filing the day before the dam transfer went through, because we were only hired 2 weeks before that. So we had to put all the information together within a very short period of time, which is, you know, what we do. And we were filing it a day before the conveyance, and they granted us an emergency hearing in Washington. And then all of a sudden, they changed the judge on us. The judge assigned to the case was one person, and then they dropped in another judge who had a totally different perspective.
Who just happened to be not having your perspective.
Well, it happened to be an appointee of President Obama.
Oh,
yeah. So we know his perspective.
Yeah, we all know how that worked out. We need to take another quick break here. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. I know this is confusing and it's a ton of information for people who haven't looked at this before, but if you think this isn't coming for you, you're dreaming, because all of this is going to affect your power rates as well. Hydropower is clean, green, cheap power, but not for long. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back with Lawrence Kogan.
How are we doing?
Didn't know there was a Give a Damn song, Bob. Who was that?
Spanky and Our Gang.
Oh, why didn't I know that? That's why I don't.
I knew that.
You were in the cone of silence again.
Oh, there you go, see?
Oh, my gosh. Welcome back. You're listening to We the People Radio. We're on with Lawrence Kogan this morning, or this afternoon, I should say. And he is the managing principal of the Kogan Law Group. And they do all sorts of stuff. I like this one sentence, Lawrence, from your website, because it sounds like all the stuff we need. Since 2003, you've briefed U.S. industry and various U.S. federal agencies, executive offices, and congressional committees concerning how emerging foreign environmental, health and safety, and intellectual property laws, regulations, and technical product standards are impacting U.S. businesses' profitability, a.k.a. killing it, and impacting technological innovation and international competitiveness. This kind of stuff's breaking us, isn't it?
Well, I'm sorry?
All this nutty regulation is just breaking businesses.
Well, there's a growing trend internationally to curtail capitalism. It's an anti-capitalist movement around the world that's been ongoing for the last 20 years. And so when businesses go overseas and they look for opportunities, they have to answer to governments that are not orientated toward free market and private property, as our government used to be until 2009. Now, our government is just like these foreign governments.
Yeah, they've jumped on the bandwagon because why would we want to take care of the people who live here? What's this going to do for power rates? Do they get to control that, or is that controlled by, like...
Well, this is interesting because the tribal government does own a power company on the reservation, owns a transmission company.
Okay.
But the dam itself generates its own electricity, and the tribe gets to pursue electrical contracts, electrical transmission contracts, for its own favor, and it claims that it's serving the public interest as an ancillary benefit.
So taking that dam out would probably not benefit them at all then.
Well, yeah, which, again, it's a large dam, so maybe they can work with it as long as they can keep the fish happy. They can make money and keep the fish happy, then they're all for it. But it's interesting how Northwestern Energy, which is the former licensee operator of the dam, got a sweetheart deal, and they're the exclusive transmitter of the Kerr Dam energy.
Hey.
It so happened that they were sponsoring the tribal government's conveyance and the new subsidiary's licensee status because they knew they were going to get a transmission contract out of it.
Well, as long as it worked out for them, I mean.
Well, I think the making money part might just nudge the fish out by a hair. I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could always buy new fish. You know?
That's right.
Exactly. You could just go to Costco and, like, around here, you know, we have these coho salmon that are supposedly endangered, but we can buy them at Costco. So, you know, it's never quite added up correctly.
Right. But, you know, going back to this federally recognized tribal entity status that the tribe enjoys and has enjoyed since it became a federally recognized tribal entity, they have all these regulatory waivers, so they don't have to meet any requirements. So when Montana public citizens had inquired through this administrative process before the dam was transferred about whether the dam is assured to be safe and secure by the tribal government and the subsidiary and the current licensee, or the previous licensee, Northwestern Energy, they were never given any answers to those questions. They weren't given an answer to whether they had, you know, flood emergency plans. They weren't given any answer, which is covered usually by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in their regulations. And they weren't given any answer to the question concerning whether the tribal government and the subsidiary corporation and the Northwestern Energy had at all engaged in any exercises for national security purposes with the Department of Homeland Security. They just wouldn't talk about that. You couldn't even go on the FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission website, and find any information since the information was deemed by the Obama administration to be classified.
Oh, nice.
So public gets no accountability from the tribal government or FERC, no transparency. Unlike, you know, a normal private entity would, because private entities would be subject to the regular requirements of FERC law. And it would also be subject to even Securities and Exchange Commission, because usually they're public companies. Now, Northwestern is pretty much owned 80 to 90% by New York Wall Street hedge funds. Mm.
So
they're geared toward making profit.
Well, where does the national security end come in on this?
Well, with all these regulatory waivers, and the fact that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission won't answer people's questions pursuant to an administrative process that is offered to the public to gain information to allay their concerns, you have a situation where people who live near the reservation or on it don't know whether the dam is safe and secure.
Nice.
And back in 2012, there was this law that Congress had enacted in its infinite wisdom that provides, you know, federally recognized tribes with the ability to lease reservation lands to any third party they want, including foreign parties. They can walk onto the reservation and lease lands for educational, religious, cultural, agricultural, and other purposes with no government oversight.
So even if they had a FOIA request for maintenance records or anything like that on the dam, you can't get them?
No, they're classified. You won't get them. And this administration is famous for its non-transparency on FOIA. I know because we filed FOIA requests with EPA and NOAA back a year ago, and they wouldn't give up any of the information.
Wow.
So what are the odds that they'll lease any of this to
They won't. They don't believe that people are entitled to a public hearing. Why should they be entitled to information?
Right. No, I mean, what are the odds that they would lease this to a foreign entity? I mean, is there any discussion of that?
That's one of the interesting things that we discovered, because when you go through the CSKT's annual reports, which are online, and you go through their newsletters, they were bragging about the fact that they had been in Istanbul, Turkey, in the Middle East, and how they had developing relationships with the government of Turkey and Turkish American associations of business in Washington, D.C., California. And Turkey, for instance, in November 2010, gave an all-expense-paid trip to 17 Indian Native American tribes from 14 different U.S. states, and they took them to Istanbul for 8 days. So we thought this was kind of interesting, especially since the CSKT companies are specialists in uranium mill tailing cleanup. So if you have uranium spill somewhere, they are experts in cleaning this up, and they've been awarded by the federal government to do it under federal government contracts. We also found that the CSKT subsidiaries manufacture missiles and other warfare devices for the U.S. government, Defense Department, plus also the Saudi Air Force and other countries.
Wow.
And, you know, this is all public information. So then we start to look at, okay, well, if this is what they do, then why is Turkey interested in these 12 to 14 different reservations? And so we started to figure out, okay, where are these physical reservations? Anywhere ranging from Michigan out to South Dakota to Arizona to New Mexico to Washington State to Oregon to Montana to Wyoming. And we found out that of at least 12 of these reservations, maybe 14, I believe, were located within 100 miles of a nuclear power plant, a nuclear fuel facility, and uranium mines and deposits underground. Now, no one could say for sure what the Turks are up to, but, you know, because they're on paper to be NATO allies. But do NATO allies go meet in private with Vladimir Putin? Do NATO allies, you know, refrain from fighting ISIS, but go after the Kurds?
They do now, because we live in a world that's completely upside down.
Right. Do NATO allies trigger all of this refugee flow out of the Middle East, which the president is now taking those people and depositing them all over the United States into sanctuary cities or even Indian reservations? So when you take all that into account, and Turkey is known to be a harborer of militant fundamentalist Islamic groups, declared on lists of terrorist organizations, you start to think about things and you wonder, could that happen here?
Well, I think when you look at this refugee situation we're involved in now, I think it certainly could help happen here. When they're talking about bringing 10,000 in, and other folks are saying that could blossom into 100,000, where are they going to go?
Right, but again, if I go back to the lawsuit, and I only stay within what we filed in the lawsuit. Sure. We did mention the fact that the government of Turkey and trade associations with Turkish roots were out there cultivating relationships with Native American tribes, including the CSKT. We did mention also that these reservations, these 12 to 14 reservations, including the CSKT, went to Istanbul. We also know that in all these reservations, these 12 to 14 reservations, as per the court record, were located approximately within 100 miles of, you know, those types of sensitive energy resources. Hmm. And we also put in the file for the court record Middle Eastern reporting, and even New York Times and Atlantic, the Atlantic Journal, that is the transatlantic medium that is well respected, had reported about terrorist groups being harbored in Turkey. Now, if you go back and look at all these reputable sources, and you start looking at where all the uranium mines are, because the Defense Department puts out reports to Congress, which we have in our filings, Los Alamos Labs in New Mexico had findings in Montana, you start to become a little bit suspicious. And something that the federal government should look to, or look at.
Yeah, it's a nice little puzzle that doesn't take a genius necessarily to put it together, not that you guys aren't smart guys, but we should be paying attention.
Right, And this is publicly available information. This is not, you know, clandestine service. This is public information. And the government just dismisses it and says, the State Department says, Turkey is a dedicated NATO ally.
Yeah, so don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. And Defense Department, if you talk to people there, you'll get a different story.
Yeah, right. Regular people who actually care about the country. We're all going to need little blue helmets, aren't we?
Or helicopter hats. Tinfoil hats, they like to call people like that.
Yeah, although now if you're not wearing a tinfoil hat, you basically can't read. I mean, if you can read, you can figure this out. Need to take one last quick break here. We're speaking with Lawrence Kogan. Hope you'll go online and look at some of this information, especially if you're skeptical. We want you to go there first. It's wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. We like our dance, and we want to keep them. Oh, my gosh. So in our last minute and a half or so, what would you advise people to do, Mr. Kogan?
Well, I would advise people to pay close attention to what happens in Montana, because there's 326 Native American reservations throughout the country. There are 566 federally recognized tribes. This can be easily duplicated in other reservation areas where people innocently believe that the laws of the 19th century and early 20th century continue to govern their property and water right ownership, which they do not. Since the 20th century, since FDR, continuing again into especially the Clinton and now the Obama administrations, we have a moving target. The law keeps on changing, the goalposts get moved, and people's land and water rights are diminished in favor of federally recognized tribes. They do a lot of the environmental regulation for EPA and Fish and Wildlife Service and NOAA.
Yeah, they're being manipulated hard.
Well, they're working together. Let's put it this way. They are working together to keep the land pristine and the water pristine, and they're pushing people off the reservations and out of the federal lands.
Well, that's the rumor, but most of us who have been on an Indian reservation haven't found pristine land. No.
Well, I have to tell you, the Flathead Indian Reservation is immensely beautiful.
Oh, well, okay, that's a rare and wonderful treat. We don't see that always.
Well, Lawrence, thanks for coming on. We're out of time. We got to have you back.
Well, thank you. I'd be very happy to come back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again.
We'll be talking about this some more. Thanks very much.
And by the way, if anybody wants to look at the legal papers, they're available on our website.
Exactly. And you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. The links are all there.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good day now.
All right, you too. Bye. Hit it, Bob.